Bill Flores joins us from D.C. Good morning, Bill.
Howdy, Scott. Great to be with you on News Talk 1620.
Well, let's talk about the State of the Union address. Where'd you sit last night?
Well, I said if you were standing where the president was standing, I was about the 10 o'clock position toward the back of the far left-hand section. Okay. So,
you didn't get a chance to race to the aisle to shake his hand, huh?
No, you know, I haven't been one of the aisle hoggers over the last few years.
I got you. Anybody special sitting in the gallery or with you?
No, not this time. I had my son sitting in the gallery using my gallery pass. And so, of course, he's special, I think. But in terms of, anybody else.
Within the constituency. Gotcha. All right. Well, all right, let me get your assessment of what you heard last night.
Well, it's interesting. I've only been there a short period of time, but this was my fifth State of the Union to sit through. And it was really sort of a paint-by-numbers type of approach to the State of the Union. The first thing the president did is he talked about how great the economy is. Then he took credit for it. Then C, he proposed a bunch of new government programs. And then D, he proposed new taxes to pay for those programs. Then the second thing he did is he went to foreign policy. He talked about how great and peaceful everything around the world is. He took credit for causing peace in the world. And then he asked Congress to do two things. One is to butt out, and then two, for more authority. The third thing he did is he talked about climate change, ending the world as we know it. And the fourth thing he did is that he reached out and said, I'm willing to work with Congress, but then he threatened us with vetoes on everything that we're working on. And so that's sort of the paint-by-numbers approach to the State of the Union. And I think it fell pretty flat with hardworking American families that are still struggling under the Obama economy.
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, we talked about this morning. I didn't watch it. I mean, he was sitting in front of a hostile body, obviously, with the Republicans holding majorities in both the House and the Senate.
Let me push back. I don't think it was hostile. I just don't think that his approach resonated, particularly that he kept sticking his finger in our eye.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I just don't think he had a very good approach to. He talks about a tone of civility, and then he was bragging about how he won two elections. So
now, coming out of this, I mean, where could you find common ground with this man today?
Well, there are a couple of areas. On trade policy, I think we can find some common ground. The president never talked about tax reform, really, in any depth, but I think there might be a way to talk about tax reform. He only wants to do corporate tax reform. We, as the conservatives in the Congress, want to talk about tax reform for individuals, as well as corporations, in order to get it right. So that's an area. He did ask for a new authorization for military force to fight the Islamic State. I think we can do that. He's not going to like what we do, though, because we're going to be very prescriptive in terms of what he can and cannot do, because he has not done a good job. And I don't think we can continue to allow him to use the same failed approaches for his foreign policy that he's used so far. So I think there was some common ground in those three areas.
Give us a sense then, back from the days when Neil Bortz was on and would talk that why don't we come up with some sort of a consumption-type tax? I mean, as we talk about doing things to make the tax code less complicated, I mean, can we really talk about the idea that there might be a future for something like a consumption tax?
Well, I think it's possible. I don't think the timing is right. And so one of the things we as the Republican Study Committee are proposing, as you remember, I chair the RSC, we're proposing a bill to sunset the IRS and to say, okay, after, let's say, 5 to 7 years, the IRS goes away. And what that does, if we can do that, A, it's an agency that nobody likes, but B, and so we get rid of it. But B, it sort of puts a time clock and a time period during which Congress and the American people need to have an in-depth discussion as to what the tax code should look like. And so if I had my druthers, I'm more leaning toward a fair tax to replace the income tax. And again, it's to replace, not to be, an additional tax. But I think if we use the fair tax, it's agnostic as to industry. It's agnostic as to consumption. And I think it treats everybody fairly, and it, you can do it in such a way where it's not regressive to lower-income families. And so I think if we do that, we'll have a lot better approach. It covers all parts of the economy, even the underground economy, And it also is very inexpensive to collect it, and you don't have a bunch of bureaucrats that can go target you for your beliefs.
You know, it's very interesting. We're just noticing that the IRS said last week that due to the cuts that Congress has levied on them, they won't be able to answer nearly as many taxpayer questions on the phone this year. I thought the timing of that was rather interesting.
Well, of course, but I guarantee you, taxpayers would be better off not asking the IRS for tax questions, because I think the statistics we read are that 70% of the time the IRS gets it wrong.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know.
David.
And the other thing is, I just kind of say, wah, wah, wah. Yeah. You know, if you hadn't been such an egregious behaving agency in the past, this would not have been a problem. The other thing, too, is you got to remember, the IRS was going to be used as the enforcer for Obamacare, and they wanted about 16,000 new agents, and that has never happened, nor will it happen, as long as you've got folks like me in Congress.
Bill Flores joining us today. David Frum, writing in The Atlantic, had an interesting theory on the president's State of the Union. I'd like to get your thought on it. He believes that mentioning a whole lot of things that won't really happen, not free community college, at least in the next 2 years, no cash grants for the middle class, no heavy tax increases on upper income earners. He says he's trying to generate some energy on the liberal base of the Democratic Party, and that would make it tough for Hillary Clinton to get the presidential nomination.
I don't know. Well, let me say this. I know that it generates a lot of passion among the left, because they love big government programs, and they love many more taxes to pay for it, and they love to engage in policies to divide America into income groups and racial groups and so forth. I don't think that but beyond that, I don't know if it makes it tougher for Hillary or easier for Hillary. I'll tell you this. In my view, Hillary is fairly left-leaning. Maybe not as much as Elizabeth Warren, but she's fairly left-leaning, so my guess is that Hillary would subscribe to all the policies that the president laid out, so I don't know that it makes it any easier or any tougher for her to become the Democratic nominee.
It'll be interesting. Now, I think last week you were headed off to a Republican retreat in Pennsylvania. Kind of give us an overview of how that went.
Well, for the first time in 10 years, we had a Republican, we had all our senators, well, almost all of our senators, except for a couple that are running for president, and we had virtually all of the House Republicans together in one place. And we were able to have some in-depth policy discussions and to talk about how aggressive the House intends to be in terms of pushing forward conservative free market solutions. And then the Senate sort of pushing back and saying, yeah, you know, we'll do the best we can, but we don't have 60 votes. So kind of reset your expectations. But at least we got to have the discussion, and we could look each other in the eye in terms of looking at our fellow Republicans, and then looking over in to our folks in the other chamber in the Senate, and trying to come to common solutions to move forward. I thought it was a good retreat, and it was great to have our senators there to visit with.
Bill Flores joining us from D.C. What's on the agenda this week for the House?
Well, two things. We've got a shortened week this week because of the State of the Union, the way it interrupted our legislative activity last night. But two big bills this week. The first one is a pipeline regulatory reform bill, which will help us to speed the approval process and review process for pipelines. The second one, and probably the more impactful one, is Pain-Capable Child Act, which prevents the killing of unborn children after 5 months of pregnancy. That should be on the floor tomorrow, and it's done in connection with March for Life. We've got a huge rally with hundreds of thousands of people up here this week from all over America that are pro-life, and so it coincides with that march.
Bill Flores joins us most every Wednesday. You can hear the entire interview archived on our website at WTAW.com. We'll look forward to talking to you next week.
Great talk to you, Scott. I'd ask our listeners, as always, continue prayer for our country, our military men and women, and our first responders.
All right. Thanks for the time.